Hey, this is Terry Degani from Blue Abroad, and you are tuned in to A Yank on the Footy.
Now in its third year, it's A Yank on the Footy with Craig Wessels, talking about the greatest game on the face of the earth. Sit back and enjoy, everybody.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 141 of A Yank on the Footy. I'm Craig Wessels, coming to you from Sandusky, Ohio, and thanks for checking out this episode of the podcast. In this episode, we're going to be continuing our 2022 AFL Draft Preview episodes. I had the pleasure of sitting down to talk with longtime friend of the podcast and host of the Blue Abroad program, which you can find on YouTube as well as a podcast, Mr. Terry Degani, and we're going to be talking about his Carlton Blues. Don't forget that you can find everything related to the podcast over at my website, ayankonthefooty.com. I do hope you'll check it out. You can get signed up on the mailing list there, so when a new episode comes out, it'll come to you immediately. And also, if you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, you can fill out the register as a guest form over there. You can leave me a voicemail. And you can also leave a review for the podcast there as well. So if you like what you're hearing on the show and you want to help out the show and give it a little bit of a good word of mouth there, you can do that as well. And if you're interested in helping out the podcast, you can check out my Buy Me a Coffee page. There's a little button at the bottom left-hand corner of the website. You can click on that, or you can also find it in the show notes. And if you are interested in any of the podcast gear, you can also find that over on my Redbubble page, which you can click on the store button at the top of the website as well. So I hope you enjoy my chat with friend of the show, Terry Degani, as we talk about the 2022 Carlton Blues. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my guest this episode is no stranger to the podcast. He's previously been a guest on a couple of episodes, number 16 and number 64. He is the host, or I guess I should say co-host of the Blue Abroad podcast, as well as, you'll hear if you go back to our first chat, actually played an integral role in helping to bring footy to Israel several years ago. I'd like to welcome back to the podcast, Terry Degani. Terry, thanks for taking time out of your morning to sit down and chat, sir.
Craig, it's a pleasure. It's great to be here for a third time. And we were just talking about the journey, and it's good to see you up and about for another season.
Yes. I didn't take any time off, because I've still been, grinding is not the right word I want to use, but I've still been working on covering the women's game as well, because, I've got a couple to watch yet from this weekend, but up until this round, I've watched every game, every round so far, because it's about all I'm watching on television.
Love it. Love to see it.
And, your Blues finally got back off the mat yesterday and got a win. And it looks like there's going to be some significant upgrades to Icon Park there.
Yes. It's coming along really quickly now that the structure has gone up. Mm-hmm. For quite a while it was empty, and it seemed like they were just clearing out the space, but now that the structure's gone up, I think over the next couple of months it'll really start looking like a brand new home.
Now, they're not necessarily looking at trying to actually play in-season games there. They're not expanding the seating capacity enough to do that sort of thing, are they?
No, not for the men. For the women.
For the women, though, yeah.
Definitely.
Makes sense.
But for the men, I mean, we are fortunate enough to be, a big enough club that can get, 50,000 people or 45,000 people on average to a game. So I don't think it would be commercially viable for us to play games there anymore.
That makes sense. And, and when the women's game, continues to grow the way that it is. I think it's, in very short order, I think you're going to start seeing the grandstands at most of these parks filled. And that's going to be a great thing.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, we have to talk about the elephant in the room when it comes to Carlton first off. And, cause I don't think we've necessarily talked about this after it happened, but in your opinion, did David T get enough time to right the ship, or do you think he should have, or it was the right call for him to go?
I think it was the right call for him to go. I think it was the wrong call to hire him in the first place. If I'm honest,
okay.
I think Michael Voss was the one that we should have hired at the time. And I've got video content back from 2019 to prove that that was what the, the sentiment was from my point anyway.
Okay.
But yeah, last season was really difficult because it became evident pretty much after round, let's say 6 or 7, that it wasn't going to be improving. And then by round 12, 13, and after the bye, it was just dysfunctional. And it became pretty clear that this, something wasn't working. And for a group who, you know, we as a fan base believe has so much talent and potential, for it to be in last year was year 6 of, you know, the rebuild, mm-hmm. for things to not be improving year on, year out. The call had to be made. The external review was obviously called and all the information was gathered. And I think we go into season 2022 with a much better coaching group and with a few little additions with the playing list as well. And hopefully this is the secret formula to get us improving.
Yeah. It's so if I read between the lines, I think it's safe to say that you think that this club is underachieved a little bit, whether it be the actions of the players or the previous coaching staff, that they didn't fulfill their destiny, if you will, during that time frame.
Absolutely. I think there's no other way to put it. I think unfulfilled potential is one of the biggest things that anyone will regret in their life. And I think as a club, as a team, I think that's really just been the story of this group, unfortunately. Yes, there have been injuries to key players, but the great teams and the great cultures are those that have a system which can cover for that. And yeah, we just have not been improving anywhere near what the fan base would expect at this point, since we really cut the club and the list and started fresh. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you mentioned, you know, you kind of addressed one of the questions that I was going to ask you in terms of your level of excitement for Michael Voss having gotten the job at this point in time. So I think it's safe to say you're ecstatic about the fact that he's there now and should be entering his third year now instead of his first year with the club.
Agreed. Absolutely. Yeah. Should be.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Now, and you know, you also mentioned, you know, the issue of injuries and, you know, somebody who's just had, you know, a spate of bad luck, you know, just since pretty much since I've been following the game the last, you know, 6 years or so. But is this the year where Charlie Kurnow finally puts together a healthy year where you can see what he's capable of?
Well, this is the closest that we've been to seeing Charlie back to full fitness since mm-hmm. the first time he was injured. And so Charlie's an interesting one because, you know, he kicks 34 goals in 2018 as a real young up and coming forward. And I guess the sentiment around what we hear from, you know, Max King, for example, was mm-hmm. not so different to what we were feeling with Charlie Kurnow back in 2018. Right. And so obviously with, you know, two full seasons out of the game, and he never really seemed to be close to playing football for a long time. Whereas obviously we got a few games into him at the back end of 2021, which was really exciting, even though he didn't quite look the same. Mm-hmm. And now to be able to see him in full training, there's no modified program that he's, you know, running along. He's in the match sim. He's doing all the sessions. And then when you go to the open training and see him moving with that same bounce and agility, obviously he is a very important piece to what we could become because he has some star talent.
Yeah, so I'm assuming they've told him to lay off the basketball.
I would hope so.
Yes, yes. Okay. Charlie, we love you, but your balls need to have points on them. Okay.
Yes, sir.
And please don't take that the wrong way, but only points on your balls. So it's you never want to see. And it unfortunately, it happens probably a lot more than we even realize because there are talented kids in every competition, whether it be the AFL or, you know, the NRL or Major League Baseball or whatever, that battle, you know, countless injuries that never get a chance to achieve the level of success that their abilities probably would have afforded them. And it's sad that ends up happening for probably far too many athletes.
Absolutely. It's a reality of the sport, a harsh reality of the mm-hmm. sport that we have to live through. And, you know, for the Carlton side of things. It just seems like every year for the last 4 to 5 years, there's always a significant injury to one of our top 3 to 5 players. But like I said before, great clubs are the ones who implement a system where when one goes out, one can step up, or collectively we can step up. And I think, you know, the Carlton Football Club has been guilty of having a, what do we call it? Like a messiah complex. So we need to change that to become more of a club as opposed to a team of heroes or individuals.
And actually, as we're talking, I'm not exactly sure that the exact time that it's happening, but within the next hour or two, about a 60-mile drive from my house, the NBA All-Star Game is going to be happening. And I don't know if you follow that at all, but it's a game where defense is, it's not that it's optional, it just doesn't exist. So it becomes kind of a hero ball kind of a thing there. It's, you know, let me do this instead of let us do this kind of a thing. So that's a great point that you have to be able to work together in order to have some success, especially in, you know, a game that, while simplistic, is still as complicated as this game is. You know, there's not, you know, you're not going from, you know, goal square to goal square on your own.
Yeah. I think when you look at the constructs of the game, you've got 18 on the field at one time. And if one or two or three players are not in the right position defensively, let's start defensively. If you're setting up a full ground defensive scheme and you've got 1 to 2 players out of place, the good teams find a way to make the most of that breakdown. And you look at the Melbourne Football Club, for example, that you watch them play. If you sit up on level 2 or even level 3, you can just see all 18 moving in unison. It's quite beautiful. And that's just not something that the Carlton Football Club has been able to do as of late.
And that, and it's funny you mentioned that about sitting up high and watching that, because that's something that I would love to see that. Because again, I only see what the television cameras are showing me. You know, the only games that I've watched in person were at ground level in Cincinnati, Ohio, back in August, when there were a handful of clubs from the USAFL playing a little regional tournament. So it would be wonderful. And Gil, if you're listening, and I know you are, wouldn't it be great if you could actually supply for supporters, you know, that kind of that above the goalpost camera angle for, and I've talked about this with somebody else on an episode a while back. I have no idea who it was, you know, to let people see, especially, you know, novices like myself, see how the game opens up and flows, because I only see that, you know, 50 square meter or 100 square meter, you know, chunk of ground on there. I don't see what's happening, you know, to be able to acknowledge, okay, well, how did those guys make that transition to that end of the ground there? I don't see that. It'd be great to be able to see that sort of thing.
You would, I think you would enjoy the game on another level as well. Like it's hard because you want the best of both worlds. But I think you're onto something there. I mean, I don't see why there couldn't be some sort of a mechanism by which, you know, there's an option to see the, you know, behind the goals footage when you're watching the game. I think that would only, you know, create more interest in the game.
Yeah, the NFL does that. They sell it on, I think it's their, I think it's what they're, what's called their Sunday ticket program, where you can watch all of the out of market games, because, you know, depending on where you live in the United States, you know, only certain games are aired in your, you know, from your local television network or your local television station. But they do offer something where you can get what's called the coaches cam. Because the coaches, the coaches are watching stuff from the end zones, from like behind the goalposts, as opposed to from the sidelines, which is what we see. Because they want to see how the team is moving forward, backward, whatever the case may be. And I'm sure there are cameras up there. Yeah, because I'm sure the coaches are using that sort of thing. It'd be neat to see it, at least just for one game, to see just kind of how it works. So, you know, to help, you know, neophytes like me have a bit of an idea of exactly how it's flowing. So if anybody wants to, you know, point me in that direction, you know, send me a link to that. I'd love to check that out. That'd be fascinating, because while I am hoping to get to Australia in the not too distant future and actually, you know, check out some games in person, it's not happening quite yet, but it's something I'm looking at doing.
All in good time, Craig.
Yes,
all in good time.
Yeah, I've kind of floated the idea with my wife a little bit, and you know, the cost is, of course, you know, a key factor. I've got my youngest still finishing up her last year of college or year and a half of college. And but the part, as I joked with her, I said, the part that really irked me the most about it, when she said, you know, you're an old man, I don't want you going to the other side of the world by yourself. And I'm thinking, what do you mean, old man? I mean, you know, I'm looking at maybe doing it in 2023 when I'm going to be 60. I don't think that qualifies quite yet as old. You know, you're going to dump me in a home or something when I get back from that. But so I don't know. But, you know, it's something that I'm looking at hoping to do, though. So back to the Blues a little bit. Okay, what are your expectations for the club this year?
My expectations are, what I'm looking at from a win-loss perspective is, I'm glad I'm speaking to an American who will get this reference, but I'm looking for a record at 500 or above.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And win 50% of our games, 11 wins or more. 11 wins can get you into the finals. Essendon did it in 2021. Mm-hmm. You're probably asking for trouble, though. If you win 12, you safely get yourself in. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for improvement, and I'm looking to be reflecting at the end of 2022 and saying to myself, did we get better across the board? And are we closer to a premiership? And I want to be able to say definitively, yes, that's okay. Ultimately what the goal is. Now, what happens between now and then is yet to happen, but that's ultimately what my expectations are. We must be improving this year significantly.
So, I'm just looking at, of course, the entire fixture, you've got everybody at least one time, but then, you know, the clubs that you're facing twice, you know, on paper, there are some opportunities there on paper. When you've got Collingwood twice, they're going to be, you know, developing side. Adelaide is, you know, another year into their rebuild. Are they, you know, are you going to, you know, be able to, you know, knock both of those off? Fremantle in many ways is in a very similar position to Carlton, because this is a club that has a pretty decent amount of talent, but they've not made it over that speed bump or that little hill to find themselves in the eight. They've kind of been on the cusp and they've just not quite made it yet. Mm-hmm. And it might come down to a battle of those two clubs for possibly that last, you know, or I don't want to say that last, but to get into the eight. I'm not committing you guys to the eight spot, saying you can't get any further than that, but you know, you may be battling with Fremantle this year for position on the ladder.
Yeah, I think Fremantle are one of the teams that are right around where we are, where we sit. There's probably mm-hmm. a group of three or four teams that are in that, you know, ninth to 12th spot, who, you know, any given year, if things go right for either of those clubs, they could find themselves, you know, in the eight.
Right, right. And of course, you know, you've got Richmond, which if they're healthy, you know, I'm not going to be stunned if Richmond's right back up the ladder this year if they're healthy.
Correct.
You know, it's I did see that, I saw that Dusty Martin was out doing some training off the side yesterday or today, had some like an adductor muscle issue that he was battling. So, you know, he's been beat up a lot this last, you know, couple of years. If he comes back healthy, and again, I mentioned to somebody else, you know, he's had a lot go on in his personal life also. You know, how is he going to deal with everything going on in his world? You know, and I hope everything goes fabulously well for him, you know, because he's a talented young man. And even though he plays on an opposing side, you don't wish, at least I don't, you don't wish ill will on anybody. I guess it's John Elway, who played football here in the States.
I think... I mean, Dustin Martin is a champion of the sport. He's mm-hmm. arguably the greatest player of the modern era, depending on how you look at it. And he's definitely a player that, you know, we have not had an answer for, and not many clubs do have an answer for Dustin Martin. So selfishly, I'm hoping he's not at his best round one. And
that's fair. That's fair.
You know, but obviously when it comes to his well-being, you obviously wish him nothing but the best, and you know, to be healthy mentally and you know, in every other aspect of his life.
Yeah, it's gonna be. Yeah, I can't wait for it to get started, because I just as you had mentioned, you know, you'd kind of alluded to, it is kind of a you know, it's in my case, it's a long, cold winter. You know, waiting for the women's game to start back up. You know, it's because I'm not in. You know, there's not a lot. I'll watch the Cleveland Browns playing football, but I don't watch a lot of, you know, American football. Besides that, I'm not. You know, I didn't even watch the Super Bowl.
Right.
Yeah, didn't even have the game on. I mean, I looked at the score on ESPN and saw who was winning and who won, but didn't. It wasn't interested in me. I was researching interviews that I was going to be doing the next couple of days. So it just wasn't my thing. So how good is Sam Walsh going to end up being? Is he somebody who, you know, in 5-6 years, we're talking about him in the same breath as we just were talking about Dusty Martin? Does he have that kind of potential to be somebody like that?
I mean, if he stays healthy, which obviously right now he's going through an ankle syndesmosis injury, which is, you know, will mean that he will miss the first game of his career. But if he stays healthy, mm-hmm. I think when it comes to anointing these champions, what actually makes them champions is the ability to do it for multiple years. Mm-hmm. And I think Sam Walsh is someone that, you know, in his first three seasons has been super consistent. So, I mean, if we're talking about the same level of consistency after 10 seasons, then
yeah.
I think he will sit, you know, comfortably in that top echelon group of champions of the game. It does come down to a bit of luck. You need good health, good fortune. You need to be playing in a side that, you know, is winning finals and preferably grand finals. But
yeah, I was going to say that part. Yeah.
Yeah. I think obviously with a guy like Sam Walsh, he is, you know, very talented, obviously, but I think what makes him special is it's not the talent that stands out. It's the hard work. Mm-hmm. And that is something I really enjoy having in a player that plays for the team.
Well, yeah. And it's, you know, it's great. You know, if somebody who is as terrific a player as he is, isn't afraid of putting in the work to help to maintain where he is and kind of, you know, and you know, I've not seen anything in the news about him in terms of, you know, hey, oh no, we need to worry about him in terms of, you know, decisions he's making away from the grounds, that sort of thing. It just seems like he's playing the game and living his life, you know, humbly, and just, you know, from what I've gathered. And, you know, it's one of the hundreds of quotations I have hanging up in my classroom at school, it's a Kevin Durant who plays basketball quote that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work. And if he's doing both of those things, that's going to play out very well for him in his career.
Yeah, no, yeah. Spot on. And I think you've picked up on something that's really important there. And that is one of the traits of a lot of our players. They're good humans, and touch wood, we don't have many, if any, players who I worry about, you know, with off-field indiscretions. And while she...
Sorry.
Yeah, well... that's exactly where I was going. I'm happy for you to be throwing the Collingwood jabs at me. I'm loving it.
I picked up a little cough in New York recently.
That's a good point. It's a good point you make. I think Walsh, even Wietering as well, they're upstanding citizens, and they speak very well, and they've got their heads screwed on, and it seems like they're living their lives right now. Even though they're quite young, they're living their lives to become the best footballers that they can be, and dedicating their time to their craft, which is why they find themselves in the positions that they do.
And you know, it's, and I hope they find a great deal of success, other than of course when they're playing Geelong. But it's yeah, even though what we talked about off air before we started there, but that's just, I was really grumpy because I had to go to work that day. I was in my classroom right after that had happened, because it was supposed to be happening at like 4:30 in the morning, and I'm up, I'm ready to go, and they email me, oh, we can't have you on today. Oh well, it is what it is. So, what concerns do you have? What if you get through the first half of the fixture, what indicators are going to be there that you go, okay, this isn't quite working the way I was hoping it was going to work out?
Yeah, there's a few things. Number one is the back line. Obviously, we've lost Liam Jones, And we needed to move on from Liam Jones at some point, preferably not this year, preferably maybe next year or the year after. But, you know, the player who is, or the mechanism by which we are going to fill that hole that Liam Jones leaves, and it looks like we're going to have a new structure defensively, that's definitely one thing that has not been proven yet or tested properly. So there's that. Then there's the other notion of this midfield of ours, which leaked a lot of, which just leaked a lot in terms of from stoppage and and didn't help the back line at all last year. Now, yes, we've brought in Adam Chera and Hewitt, who are both great two-way runners, and they should be making us a better midfield group. But there are probably five or six guys who are on the list right now who have had 3 to 4 preseasons who just have not matured and been able to impact consistently. Now, whether that's a coaching thing, whether that's just them is the other thing. So I guess what I'm saying is we've changed the coaching group. The scary part for me is what happens if we just don't have the right players, and what happens if we've drafted the completely wrong players. And that's, I guess, something that plays on the back of my mind, but I'm obviously hopeful. And I think all the players in the league are talented. I think if you just put the right, you know, environment by which they can operate, then they should be able to get the best out of themselves. So the back line, the midfield, and then, you know, obviously, you know, in the forward line, you know, we need a second option. Now, in an ideal world, Charlie Curnow is fit and healthy and absolutely kicking 30 to 40 goals minimum, but it still hasn't happened yet. So the Carlton Football Club, and it really has been like this for a while, it's been a what if, or if this happens. And, you know, we need to see the, you know, I want to be able to say to you, Craig, this is what you're going to get
from
Carlton. And I don't have that right now.
It's as you're mentioning that there, it's reminding me, and I'm no expert in this, but I vaguely remember taking a couple of courses in college, you know, writing computer code, and, you know, where you had what are called the if-then statements, you know, where you're writing the code, you know, that if like this is inputted, then this happens, that sort of thing. So it's very similar to that. So, you know, if this happens, then this might be the output in terms of what positivity or what negativity could come to the club. So that's a great point. And you know, let's be honest, you guys also, while their skill set may have diminished, you know, because of their age. And again, as I have a hard time calling somebody in their early to mid 30s old. I have a difficult, you know, some, because they're young, they're, you know, I'm old enough to be the parent of anybody who's retiring from the AFL, and that, and it gets we're getting close to the whole getting close to being the grandparent kind of a thing as well. But, you know, having Eddie Betts and Mark Murphy, you know, no longer, you know, on the list, that's, you know, that's a lot of veteran presence that is going to have to be made up somehow too.
Yeah, for sure. However, I think it's time. It was time for the handover. And there may be an argument to be made that Murphy and Betts shouldn't have played last year, which is something that I have seen amongst the Carlton community, in the sense that you've got to give the responsibility over to this next generation, you know, the the Doherty's, the Wieterings, the Walshes now, even though they're quite young. But I think we were holding on to the sentiment in many respects. Obviously, Murphy playing 300 games, very, you know, important to recognize that, and Eddie Betts, who's done some wonderful things for the club, and he's come back to return to sort of, you know, make it right. But I think in turn, or especially now, I don't want to look too far in the past, but especially now, that the handover is officially complete.
Right.
We are now in a completely new era, and that responsibility is now thrust onto the next generation.
Well, and I have to tell you, I'm thrilled that, you know, that Eddie Betts is down helping the Cats out at least part-time. You know, it brought in, you know, helped to bring in his cousin who's playing with them now. And, you know, with Brian Myers, you know, having surgery, I think it's really important that Tyson Stengel is there now, because I think they're going to need him up there to help out. So.
Well, Eddie's, you're going to love, I mean, I'm sure you already do love Eddie, but
yeah,
to be working with Stengel, I think Eddie is the exact piece to help that work.
Yeah. I think it's, I'm excited to see that happening there. And it's just, yeah, he just is such a, from everything that I have seen and, you know, witnessed with him in the media, he just, I would love the opportunity to sit down and talk with him someday. You know, and I'm sure, as you know, you doing a Carlton, you know, based podcast, you'd love to do that as well. And, you know,
we actually,
have you had that chance?
Him on, oh, you yeah, did? We had Great. Him on at the after his last game, we did like an Eddie Betts special where we had fans come on and give their memories. And he actually sat in on it and he was watching. He actually came and was a part of that for 2 hours. He just sat there and we went through different fans coming on to talk to him.
Wow.
It was great.
I need to go back and check that out. I haven't listened to that then. I need to go back and look for that then.
I'll send it to you.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Cause it's knowing what he has had to deal with from, you know, a small, but still too large group of people. And just, you know, I saw the news today and I didn't see specifically what was said and I don't necessarily need to see it, but comments that were made about, you know, Liam Ryan, you know, and some photos of his sons at their game or scrimmage that they were having. And somebody had posted comments and such. And it's like, come on, these are little kids. I mean, just, you know, you could go ahead and, you know, we could just, you know, to whoever that person was, and if you're listening, and I'm going to use some technical terminology here, which I'll mark this one as explicit, but, you know, we probably already suspected that you were an asshole, but you didn't have to open your mouth and confirm it. Okay. And say, or actually, I guess it type the things that you did. It's just be decent to people. And I don't know. It's really frustrating to see that sort of thing.
It is, because it reflects so poorly. It's such a minority, which unfortunately reflects so poorly on the rest of the fan base. And I almost feel like, how can players trust fans when, you know, we want more access to them and we want them to be a bit more transparent and open so we can, you know, access them, so to speak, a little bit more. And like, I don't blame players for going into their shells and staying to themselves and, you know, keeping an arm's length away from, you know, the supporters and the loyal members, because unfortunately people ruin the fun for everyone, which unfortunately, you know, on another separate issue is, you know, a microcosm of the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's true. And it's a shame. And I'm still working on this, and I've probably mentioned it to you before, but I've been working for 2 years now trying to line up an interview with the grandson of Sir Douglas Nichols. And it's, you know, because it, you know, from everything that I have read about that gentleman, he was basically Australia's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in many respects. And, you know, I've traded dozens of emails with the grandson's daughter. You know, her brother played for Essendon for a number of years, which I'm going to reach out to him as well. But I just have not been able to make that connection yet. I'm still trying to do that because I just think it would be just fascinating to, you know, to be able to hear about this great man from somebody who knew him.
I think that'd be a great interview to listen to. I'd love to hear that.
I'm working on it. definitely working on it. So what is your bold prediction for the club this year? You could have even your headline, you know, the 2022 season is over. You know, it's now the first week of October. Everything is wrapped up. What's the Carlton headline in the Herald Sun or the Age or whichever paper you're reading?
It goes a little something like this. It reads, "My Blue Heaven."
Okay. That's up.
And the Blues are back in the finals, and we win an elimination final. We might come up short in that second round, but I think the story of 2022 will be the Blues have finally done it, from not won the premiership, but shown that, you know, they're ready to move into the right direction and matured.
Now you would be perfectly okay if they went ahead and won the premiership. You wouldn't say, wait, that's too fast, guys, slow down.
I'd be very happy. Very happy. You will hear and feel the commotion all the way from where you are, Craig. There is a sleeping giant that is really just bubbling and waiting to explode.
Well, so. a huge one just exploded back in September, you know, wearing red and blue. So, yeah, it could be blue and white as well.
Could be.
Yeah, very much could be. So, But I have to ask this as a follow-up question, though. Can anybody stop Melbourne?
I don't think anyone can stop Melbourne this year. I think they've unlocked themselves.
Okay.
This reminds me of Richmond when they won their first premiership, you know, of the three that they that they won. And their second year after winning the first one was unbelievable. They had such a confidence about them. And I think Melbourne have only just scratched the surface now. And I think now that they've done it, they know what it takes.
Yeah.
They're just going to want to replicate it after so many years of misery, which is where I hope we find ourselves in the next few years when we, you know, scratch at that door and finally, you know, burst it down and hopefully never go back.
Yeah. I talked to a D supporter last night. And, you know, the metaphor about, you know, the premiership window being open, that sort of thing. I told her, I said, to be honest with you, I think the guy doing the repairs on the home just came and took the entire window structure out. It's not the window's open. The window's not even there right now. And just the breeze is blowing back and forth through there. And the thing is, you know, I'd have to go back and look, but I think that, you know, overall, in terms of the age structure of Melbourne, I think that they are probably several years younger than where Richmond was when they won their second, when they won their first one. I guess it would be their second one also, because it'd be another year. So who knows, you know, and I don't know this for a fact. Has there ever been a club that, I hate to ask this, has there, and I'm just hypothesizing, has there ever been a club that's won four in a row?
Four in a row. There is.
And that was not intended as a trivia question. So
if no, there is. It was in the early 1900s, but there definitely is a club that has done it. I think it's just one.
Well, when there were significantly fewer clubs, when it was still the VFL. Yeah.
Yes. And playing almost a different sport.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost painful to think that's such a good side that, you know, are the other 17 clubs battling to see who's going to be the premiership runner up? I mean, is it, and I don't want to, and I shouldn't say that because, you know, is that what's actually happening?
Well, I think the other variable this year, which we haven't had for many years, is the COVID situation. You just don't know health and safety protocols.
That's true. Yes.
You know, yeah. There's such a different variable now that's added to the mix that you don't know who may be a late withdrawal in an important game, and you just don't know how it's going to play out. There's definitely some twists and some turns to come. I think the beauty of this season in a funny way is that you don't know what could happen next. Like, yeah, right now in February, before we've played a practice match, we are all saying Melbourne are definitely the team to beat. But, you know, footy is a very, very funny game, and anything can happen.
Right. Yeah, and I know that last year I didn't even have Melbourne in the eight. You know, so it's. I think I'll have them there this year.
I think so.
I don't even think I'm going to use a pencil when I write their name down for that one, though. So, who, besides the Blues, who else do you think is got a shot at moving up the ladder into the eight, and who might fall out, do you think?
I know you won't like me hearing me say this.
I've heard it from several people. It's okay. You're not hurting my feelings.
I would love to see Geelong fall out of the eight. I would love it. I think the time is coming, and I guess I'm just jealous. That's ultimately where it comes from. But someone's got to make way. The Bombers, they really surprised me last year making the eight, considering how many injuries they had. I'm not sure where the Eagles tipped
them 17th last year.
Oh, wow. I think I might have done something similar. The Eagles are always a tough opponent because when you play them in Perth, it's very hard to beat them there. And if they're at full strength, I can't see them losing any more than three games max in Perth of the 11 that they'll play there. So you can never count them out, and I would expect them to bounce back because they've got plenty of premiership experience and they've just been injured as well, very similar to Richmond. So those are the teams. And then there's St Kilda, who had a bit of a down year last year after a good year the year before. And, you know, they're coached well. They've got, you know, star talent. You know, you've got Max King, who's ready to take that next step as well. So there are a few. I think you mentioned Fremantle as well. So, you know, and then there's the Giants as well. Like, this is the group of four teams who I think two of them are going to rise, and I think maybe one or two in the eight will fall.
Yeah, and it's actually one of the other American podcast footy podcasters said during an interview that they had done that they thought that Geelong was like a pyramid scheme, which I thought, you know, the more I thought about it, I said that's actually not a bad analogy, as much as it's, you know, it's supposed to offend me and make me feel bad. It's not a horrible analogy, because you've been paying, you've been robbing Peter to pay Paul for a number of years. And is it going to come crashing down, you know, or are they, you know, going to get enough young kids to, you know, develop? They're going to pick the right kids that, you know, once, and keep them around once, you know, Selwood and, you know, everyone else decides to step away from the game. You know, who knows? But are you ready for some Blues trivia here?
I'm ready for some Blues trivia.
Okay. All righty. I have, let's see, 2, 4, 6. I wrote down 8 or 9 questions for you here. Okay. We'll see if we get through all of them or not. But these two players lead the Blues all time goal kicking records, with both of them having kicked over 700 goals.
Stephen Kernaghan would be one.
Yep.
And the other one would be, 700 goals. Is it Brendan Favola?
I think he was up there, but it's not him. He was up close to that.
Okay.
Harry Valance?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well and truly before my time.
Yep, there you go. Now, this was a shocker when I looked this one up. Okay, this one really surprised me. After Harry Mackay's 58 goals, who kicked the second most goals for Carlton in 2021?
It was a shocker.
Oh, this, I was shocked by this because it's, in many ways, it's rather telling of the way the club went.
I'm going to say, should know this. Was it Eddie Betts?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
With 27.
Yeah.
You know, guy who just, you know, 20 minutes ago, you had said maybe he should have retired. I mean, that, you know, when you have a guy come in as kind of like for his swan song.
Yeah.
And he's your number two goal kicker. And he didn't play in several games last year, if I'm not mistaken. There were several games he missed.
Very true.
I mean, that you were right. Somebody does need to step up on the other side there. That other key forward needs to step up down there.
A second forward and a third.
Yeah. All righty. Who had the worst disposal efficiency for the Blues in 2021? And I will tell you, he played 13 games.
The worst disposal efficiency, and he played 13 games. Was it Ed Kerno?
It was not.
No?
Levi Casbolt.
Oh, gosh.
54.1%. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know if he had enough of the ball to have that bad of a disposal efficiency.
Well,
but
the few times that he had it, it just didn't go well, and he's now elsewhere. So.
No.
Okay. So this player led the Blues in on-time, on-ground percentage in 2021.
That would surely be Jacob Wiedering.
Yes, it was 95.91%.
Yes,
that's pretty significant there.
He's our most important player.
There you go. Who's the captain of the Carlton AFLW side?
That would be Kerryn Harrington.
I thought I'd sneak one in on you there, and yep, you're absolutely right. You're right. Now, this is going to be a painful one to answer.
Okay.
I'm just going to put it out there right now. who did Carlton beat in their most recent finals win?
It would be Richmond in 2013. It was a great day.
Yes. Yep. And I think they lost to Sydney the next week, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We weren't even supposed to be in the finals that year.
Now, which club throughout the history of Carlton, which club have the Blues defeated more than any other club?
Collingwood?
St. Kilda.
Oh.
164 times.
Great.
Yep. Now, on the flip side, which club has defeated Carlton the most times in their history?
I'm going to say maybe Hawthorn.
Nope, I'd have gone with the previous answer, Collingwood.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Okay. 128, and Essendon was at 118.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. I have two more questions. One of my, I did a little bit of digging on this one. I because I hadn't heard of it before. Who was Carlton's first Brownlow winner?
First Brownlow winner? Oh,
1947.
Well, I'm just going to go back in time in my memory, back to 1947. let's go with 1947. John Nichols. I don't think he won a Brownlow, though.
Bert Deacon.
Okay.
I had never heard of him before I saw that today anyway.
Okay.
Okay.
Need to brush up on my history.
Yeah. Now, this is a several-part question here. This is the last one. We're going back to 1945, though.
Great.
Okay. Who did Carlton defeat in the 1945 Bloodbath Grand Final?
The Bloodbath Grand Final. Was that South Melbourne?
It was South Melbourne, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Now,
here's the bonus question, the bonus part of this one.
All right.
How many players were suspended as a result of their actions in the game?
I'm going to say 8.
You're close. 7. 7.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of the South Melbourne players was actually suspended for over an entire season.
Wow.
He was out because I guess when they were trying to report him, he pulled up his jersey, his jumper, so they couldn't read the number, that sort of thing. And here's the, this is the last question here. You're probably not going to get this one, but I'm going to ask it anyway, but some Carlton supporter who's been a fan their entire life might know this. You might know it as well, but which previously suspended Carlton player, he was already suspended, wasn't able to play in the grand final, was suspended for a further 4 weeks for running on the ground during the game and striking a South Melbourne player?
I'm assuming this was from that Bloodbath game.
Yes, it was the same game. Yeah. This had, I would love to see footage of this. It sounded just vicious.
I couldn't tell you one player that played that day, so okay. I'm going to have to pass.
And that's okay. That
one of your listeners is answering him.
Hopefully, yes. Somebody named Fred Fitzgibbon.
Wow.
Fred had already been suspended, missed the grand final, and still went out and got in on the action then, and got a suspension for another 4 games then. But the other 7 players were all suspended anywhere between 8 and 12 rounds.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was just... I mean, I haven't looked to see who played in the 46 grand final, but with that many people out from both sides, I'm guessing maybe South Melbourne and Carlton didn't get there. I have no idea who was in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what can we expect from Blue Abroad this year?
Much of the same, a lot of hard work and it's all about really being consistent. You know, we've set up the foundations now and we've got the, you know, the 5 or 6 shows that are on the network. Mm-hmm. And now it's just about continuing on to, you know, cover every aspect of what's happening with the club. We've got a good range of shows from, you know, a younger audience to a bit of an older audience, and hopefully some more smiles after some more wins. That would be great, because the fan cams are unfortunately very entertaining for non-Carlton supporters because they like to come on and watch the meltdown from when we lose. So hopefully, hopefully we get to experience some more wins and just create more of a, you know, digital community that we already have and just build off that.
Okay. And where can listeners find your show? Because you're on YouTube as well, right?
YouTube is the sole focus at the moment.
Okay.
So youtube.com/blueabroad. Also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, but YouTube is where all the action really stems from. So If you're a Carlton supporter and you aren't aware of Blue Abroad, where have you been? If you're not a Carlton supporter and you want to get in on the action, come and join the fun.
Okay. Sounds great. Yeah. It's fun watch. I'll be honest. I don't watch all of them, but I do tune in from time to time when I get the chance and I have some downtime. I'm not going to be tuning into anything over the next couple of weeks because I'm officially swamped. I have to keep reminding myself this is a hobby, but I'm getting ready to start changing the H to a J and start calling it a jobby.
Love it. Love it.
So, hey, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank again Terry Degani for taking time out of his morning to come on and chat about the Blues. I do think this is an up-and-coming side, and the potential is there for them to start making moves towards even, or as I like to say, 500. I don't know. It's, you know, that doesn't seem to be that difficult a concept to grasp. You know, you're playing 500 ball. It's I get, but oh well, like 50%. You're about average there. So Terry, thanks for coming on today, man. I truly appreciate it.
Not a problem, Craig. It's a pleasure to be here, and congratulations on how far you've come, and looking forward to seeing how far you'll go.
I appreciate it. This has been a fun journey, and you know, having support from, you know, great people like yourself over the last couple of years has been invaluable. And I can't thank you enough for the, you know, the kind words and the help you've given me while this has gone on.
Anytime, mate.
You bet. And a huge thanks to Terry for being so generous with his time. Just an insightful gentleman, just an absolutely nice man, and has done, you know, so much to grow the game of footy around the world. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to the previous instances where I've had him on the podcast, if you go back and search his name, I had him on a while back, and just a really interesting story about what he did in terms of growing the game in a completely different country than his own. Now, don't forget that you can reach me at yankonthefooty@gmail.com or on Twitter at @yank_on. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at @ayankonthefooty. And you can also find the podcast on YouTube. Just search out for my name there, Craig Wessels. And again, I do, like I said, hope you'll sign up for the mailing list over on my website. Now, everybody, we're just about a week and a half away from the start of the season. I want to thank you for listening because, you know, we're all fans of our clubs, and hopefully you're tuning into your club's preview episode, or maybe your club that you dislike the most, you're turning into theirs and seeing how they're going to go this year. That's fantastic. I do hope you'll consider sharing a link for the podcast with your friends and family, or maybe your favorite episode. I cannot thank all of you for the kind words and the support that you've given me. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, may your dribble kick never hit the post. I will catch you later. This has been episode 141 of A Yank on the Footy. Don't forget that you can reach me at @yank_ on Twitter or to yankonthefooty@gmail.com. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at @ayankonthefooty. And please check out the website, yankonthefooty.com. Thanks for listening, and please consider sharing the podcast with your friends and family. And until the next episode, folks, or until I see you out on social media, whether it be Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn, goodbye.